Good afternoon. I'd like to call the House Labor and Commerce Committee to order. Today is Friday, March 8th, 2024. Let the record reflect the time is 3:20 p.m. Today we have present Representative Sadler, Representative Prox. Representative Fields is online, and myself, Chair Sumner. The staff that will be assisting us today are Kevin Allen with House Records, Zachary Lawhorn with the LIO, and Clark Bigford, my staff and committee aide to House Labor and Commerce. On today's agenda, we have one bill hearing from Representative Allard. Then we will have public testimony on SSCR4, disapprove EO 127, SSCR6, disapprove EO 129, and SSCR7, disapprove EO 130. We will start with House Bill 175 from Representative Allard. Representative Allard, please approach the committee, put your name on the record, and begin your presentation.
Thank you, Chair Sumner, and thank you to the members of the committee for allowing us to present our bill today, which is HB 175, midwifery. If you don't mind, I'll start off by, my name is Representative Allard. Put that on the record. I don't know if I did it or not. I'm short-term memory right now. But I'm going to go ahead and start off with the sponsor statement. Thank you. House Bill 175 aims to enhance access to midwifery care in Alaska by alleviating unnecessary restrictions on licensed midwives. Midwives deliver crucial health care services to women throughout pregnancy, childbirth, and postpartum period. Yet certified midwives in Alaska face practices limitations that this bill proposes to eliminate. And Chair, I'm going to repeat that sentence one more time. I want that to sink into the public and to the committee. Yet certified midwives in Alaska face practice limitations that this bill proposes to eliminate. HB 175 intends to retitle the Board of Certified Direct Entry Midwives to the Board of Licensed Midwives and extend its termination date to 2027. It seeks to align licensing with national certification standards. And I might do this a couple times, but I'm going to repeat that too so it sinks in. It seeks to align licensing with national certification standards, removing the need for separate state certification and examinations. This bill aims to prevent the Board of Licensed Midwives from enforcing regulations that would curtail midwifery practices. Under this bill, midwives would not require physician supervision or written collaboration agreements to practice, could attend home births, and provide care for 6 weeks postpartum, extending from the current 4 weeks. Additionally, HB 175 mandates health insurance plans to cover services provided by licensed midwives, ensuring care is both accessible and affordable. I wanted to repeat that as well. Right now we have moms that the midwives are currently not allowed to use the insurance companies to pay for the birth of the babies. So additionally, I'll repeat, HB 175 will mandate health insurance plans to cover services provided by licensed midwives, ensuring care is both accessible and affordable for Alaska families, significantly reducing healthcare barriers. In conclusion, HB 175 is designed to remove hurdles faced by midwives and the soon-to-be mothers depending on them. It seeks a balance between public safety and the preservation of birth choices and women-centric care. Chair, I have a sectional analysis. It hits on 50 different points. It could probably take me about 20 to 30 minutes to read. I think on my sponsor statement, I hit on those points. And I have invited testimony here from Mary Yugamarka.
Yanagawa.
There you go. And she will be talking more in depth if that is okay with you, Chair.
Thank you, Representative Allard. We can waive the reading of the sectional analysis. Members have it, and it's available to the public.
Thank you.
I believe. So we will go to your invited testimony if you'd like to begin and put your name on the record.
Thank you to the Chair, Mr. Sumner, and the committee members and staff for being here today. My name is Mary Yanagawa. I am a licensed and practicing midwife in Wasilla. Recently, I was president of the Midwives Association of Alaska, our state professional organization. And during that time, I made many connections with policymakers, lawmakers, stakeholders, and constituents. I have been practicing in my community for the past decade, and I have attended over 500 births of Alaskan babies. The project that culminated in House Bill 175 that sits before you began because the Legislative Audit Report in 2020 pointed out the Board of Midwives needed to update regulations and statutes to national standards, streamline the licensure process, and ensure accountability for peer review and adequate continuing education requirements. House Bill 175 aims to meet those requirements of the legislative audit, and if passed, it will do so. The bill before you is a simple bill. It is lengthy because of the name change, and everywhere in statute, CDM is listed. It has to be updated to licensed midwife. This is a more recognizable and understood term nationwide and for insurance and policymakers. House Bill 175 brings Alaskan midwives into the 21st century with up-to-date educational requirements and licensure requirements. By changing the licensure process to one where the National Accrediting Body, known as NARM, issues certification prior to state licensure, we have been able to streamline the process to licensure and will be eliminating the burden to the chronically understaffed Division of Licensing. House Bill 175 enables Alaskan midwives to practice to the full scope of their training, certification, and experience, and removes the archaic restriction of trade that we have been practicing under. House Bill 175 will require insurance companies that provide policies to Alaskan families to cover Alaskan licensed midwives for midwifery care. It requires all preceptors, those training future Alaskan midwives, to be nationally vetted and certified. House Bill 175 will ensure that the midwifery profession flourishes and the legacy of Alaskan midwives continues for generations to come and will be protected in statute. With the passage of House Bill 175, we will see an influx of more midwives in our profession, which will aid in access to care for rural communities, increase competitiveness and quality of care that we provide to the market, and overall improve the care provided to Alaskan families. So I have on the screen above you, we have a slideshow if you want to reference that. Do you want me to just read it?
You can.
Okay.
And what we'll do, Chair, if that's okay with you, she's going to go ahead and read it. And if there's any questions, we'll go ahead and pause after each slide.
House Bill 175 is an act relating to midwives in the practice of midwifery, relating to apprentice midwives, renaming the Board of Certified Direct Entry Midwives as the Board of Licensed Midwives, relating to the Board of Licensed Midwives, extending the termination date of the Board of Licensed Midwives, and relating to insurance and providing for an effective date.
And Chair, I don't know if Mary had mentioned it or not, but she has delivered over 600 babies. I think that's pretty significant on her expertise.
What are the benefits of House Bill 175's facts and statistics? Licensed midwife, what does this bill do? So these are the things that we'll talk about in the following slides. So benefits of midwifery care can be demonstrated through statistics and also through anecdotal evidence. We have significantly lower cesarean section rates under the care of CDMs or CPMs. In the state of Alaska, we have a 6% cesarean rate versus 23% in hospital. CDM and CPMs have had zero. Mm-hmm. Oh, yes. So CDM is Certified Direct Entry Midwife. That is our current title in the state of Alaska. We have had zero maternal deaths versus the hospital statistics. If you look at the maternal mortality rate and the statistics that are given out yearly from the Division of Health, it's between 6 and 20 every year. And that is part of your packet, the maternal mortality rate documents. We have significantly fewer low birth weight babies and babies born prematurely. With the care of certified direct entry midwives and professional midwives, all indicators are for improved outcomes, especially for vulnerable populations. Vulnerable populations are usually known as those living in outlying areas and those that are of lesser economic resources. We have significantly higher breastfeeding rates and 99% at birth, and at 6 weeks postpartum, women are continuing to breastfeed with the care of midwives and out-of-hospital birth. We have higher rates of an intact perineum. I know that might not be something that a lot of people think about, but it's something that midwives think about a lot. We keep we protect perineums, and that's important for long-term health consequences for women and their families. We have lower unneeded medical interventions such as induced labor, continuous electronic fetal monitoring, and cesarean birth. Overall, if you look at anecdotally, we have better experiences with community birth. With midwives, lower postpartum depression rates due to being more satisfied with the personalization of their care environment, the quality of their relationship with their midwife, and their ability to have a physiological birth.
Any questions?
We pulled some statistics from 2023. The current statutes for midwifery care for midwifery in the state of Alaska are over 30 years old. They need to be updated, and they need to meet the national midwifery standards. 33 Alaskan CDMs, certified direct entry midwives, attended 6% of the births in our state. In average, the lower 48 sees about a 1% out-of-hospital birth rate. So there are a lot of babies being born out of hospital with midwives in Alaska compared to nationwide. 94% of Alaskan women who begin care with CDMs have a vaginal birth, and that's the correlation of our 6% cesarean rate. We have a 3% postpartum maternal transfer rate, which if you look at global medical bodies, they feel like that is an appropriate transfer rate, and we are seeing those transfers as appropriate for medical care. A 0% maternal mortality rate, as I discussed before. Alaskan midwives have a 6% cesarean rate versus 23% in hospital, 2% neonatal transfer rate, and a 0.02 neonatal mortality rate for 2023. So as we've gone through the process of putting this bill forward, it has been discussed over and over again. What is a midwife? What are the types of midwives? And how are we all regulated? An APR, so this is more of like a informational slide, so you can see APRN is an advanced practice registered nurse. So she went to nursing school, she or he nursing school, and then pursued a profession in midwifery. Their title is certified nurse midwife, or sometimes they are called women's health nurse practitioners. The majority of them work in the hospital system. They are registered nurses who enter the midwifery profession through their nursing degree with additional training in midwifery. Versus, on the other hand, we have licensed midwives. Those are, that's us, the ones that we are talking about here with House Bill 175. Licensed midwives, or certified direct entry midwives in Alaska, are also called CPMs, and the national credential is called Certified Professional Midwife. We are licensed midwives specifically trained for out-of-hospital birth. At the request of the legislative audit in 2020, we were requested to make a regulation change requiring that we are not just qualified for the state of Alaska, but nationally we all hold this CPM now. Okay, so what does this bill do? This bill protects families from the medicalization of childbirth and disempowerment of women. And in this day and age in society, that is huge for what we're dealing with maternal health care wise and also mental health care wise. This bill will increase access and utilization of out-of-hospital midwifery care services. It will help streamline the process for licensure, and we will get more midwives when we are able to pass this bill. It'll enable midwives to practice to their full scope of training and certifications. We will no longer have the restriction of our trade in the state of Alaska. The first major update to our midwifery legislation in over 30 years. 30 years ago, the midwives fought and were able to successfully create licensure in Alaska, have a board, have insurance coverage. All of that happened 30, 40 years ago, and it was a battle for a good decade, and they successfully did it, but they had to make accommodations. At that time, we have been practicing under those accommodations, and this bill will remove the accommodations that were made 3 decades ago and bring us up to the national standards. It updates our title from CDM to licensed midwife, so we are recognized by major insurance plans, which will make birthing out of hospital more affordable and available to Alaskans. Anyone have any questions?
Representative Prox.
Right. Thank you. Through the chair, Ms.
Yanagawa.
Yanagawa, thank you.
Yes.
Is a delivery via a midwife covered by insurance in Alaska today?
Yes, most insurance, but there are some insurance policies that restrict our type of midwife. This bill would give us a statute to back us up and say, if you have an insurance plan that this family is paying for in Alaska, mm-hmm. you have to honor that plan, and the family can utilize their insurance.
Okay. And then do midwives carry malpractice insurance?
Some midwives do. Some midwives choose to. It's not a requirement. I choose to. A lot of birth center practices choose to. There are malpractice insurance requirements in order to be in network with some insurance companies. And so for that reason, if a midwife in her practice chooses to carry malpractice, then she can. And that's across the board for other healthcare providers too. Not all medical doctors carry malpractice insurance. It depends on the practice that they have right. developed.
And then on page 10, the section that takes out page 10, line 7, appears to remove not knowingly deliver a woman with certain types of health conditions, prior history, or complications as specified by the board. I haven't looked that far, but I'm guessing if I did that, I would find what those conditions might be and what we're eliminating.
I'm not sure. And I don't know if that was just redundant verbiage that they were eliminating, uh-huh. but it's very unspecific. So I'm not sure what it is that they're removing right there.
Okay.
May I? What we'll do is Representative Prox will find out if it actually is removing something and adding, or how it might or might not have unintended consequences, and my office will get back with you.
Okay. And I'm just another follow-up. Sorry, hogging it here.
Go ahead.
I'm guessing that training of scope of practice would come into the nationally accredited training programs.
Right. The CPM is our national credentialing, and that scope of practice is what we would fall into. So we wouldn't be practicing outside of that CPM scope.
Very good. Thank you.
Representative Sutton.
Thank you. I have many. First, to the chair, Ms. Yanagawa. CPM stands for?
Certified Professional Midwife. Thank That's you. The national okay. title.
And actually, that's the question. Who issues the credential?
The issuing body is called National North American Registry of Midwives. So it is the licensing exam that a midwife will take after her schooling is done.
I'm sorry, could you repeat the North American what?
North American Registry of Midwives.
Okay. Okay. And I guess the question through the chair I'll ask, and this is a deep question and not being a medical guy in any way, shape, or form, so the more detail you go into, the more confused you'll make me.
Okay.
But what are the distinctions between how midwives can practice in Alaska and how they would be able to practice if Alaska recognized the North American Registry of Midwives certification for professional midwifery as the licensing standard? What would be the difference in care of practice?
Through the chair, Mary Yanagawa, again, the national accreditation or credential, essentially, there's a national movement for all states to become CPM to make a standard across the board. In Alaska, we came along with our CDM, the Certified Direct Entry Midwife, prior to a lot of other states. So we were in the, on the forefront, and we were inventing the wheel. And then nationally, there was a movement for education standards and credentialing standards, the test that everyone takes now to get your CPM is now recognized pretty much across all 50 states that it's ideal. And not all 50 states do license midwives. So it is still like there's still some states that are illegal, that are illegal. They don't have any licensed midwives in their state. In the state of Alaska, we can practice essentially the same as a CPM. And recently we put through the requirements to become a CPM in the state of Alaska. And that has, once again, for the administration and the legislative audit, they were telling us to bring our licensing up to national standards. So that's what the board chose to do.
Okay. Let me follow up. I appreciate the process you described, but kind of quantitatively, is what can certified direct entry midwives, what can certified direct entry midwives do in their practice in Alaska now under our current certification process that they would be able to, what can't they do now that they would be able to do under the national certification?
Oh, I see what you mean. Yeah. So the CDM had some restrictions, and we talked about that restriction of trade. There was accommodations made that prevented us from delivering twins outside of hospital and breeches and VBAC. So that's vaginal birth after cesarean. And those are kind of the three main things that people will talk about when they're talking about the national accreditation.
And through the chair, could you repeat those a little slower, please?
Yes. So twins.
Twins, yep.
And breech, which is a baby not coming head down.
Okay.
And then a VBAC is vaginal birth after cesarean section.
Okay, gotcha. Okay. And are there other differences in the capabilities practice?
Not typically. It's pretty much standard across the board. Depending on each state has different licensing requirements, and the states that are going to the CPM standard are across the board, just using the CPM. And if you get your CPM, you have training and the certification to do those types of deliveries.
If I made another line of questioning, I have, and I think other members of the committee have received a fair amount of email from people, and there's some assertions in the email, it's called a petition, that asserts that basically that someone is trying to force women to give birth in hospitals, is forcing women into more dangerous situations, which, you know, force obligations. So I'm not quite sure how the, I guess we're speaking of the bill right now, and you know what, I apologize. Because the topics are somewhat intertwined and because the issues are somewhat intertwined, I have just conflated the EOs and SSCRs with the bill. And I apologize, I'll withdraw the question.
Thank you. That's okay.
Representative Sadler, I believe the petitions I saw, at least, were on both the bill and the EO. But
well, then, if I may, then, not to conflate things. But again, there are some assertions that that women are being forced to do things. I'm just wondering what the mechanism that would force people. I understand you may have views on the advisability or the benefit to your industry or to women, but I'm not quite sure what the mechanism is to that it would be forcing women to do this or to do that or not.
Right. Through the chair. So I think the verbiage of the petition may have come across very strong. I wasn't the author of those petitions, but the verbiage did seem very strong. And I think what they are saying is without good access to quality midwifery care, women are left with limited options. And if your only option is to go to the hospital where you may have had prior abuse or a birth trauma, then you would feel like you were being forced into that situation. Whereas with a midwife, you would potentially be in a safer environment in your mind because you are feeling like they aren't forcing you. Midwifery care is very much advocating for patient autonomy and informed consent, and we are much less pressuring than the typical medical like hospital model.
Okay. And thank you through the chair. And I guess for the record, I want to say that, yes, there were some fairly strongly assertive language. And I think I hear you saying that that might be not 100% accurate on mechanisms. There might be an implication that if something else were continuously to happen, but the situation right now, you know, right now women are not forced to go to hospitals. And if the EOs were allowed to take effect, women would also not be forced. I certainly understand that people advocate for midwifery, but I don't think anyone's forcing anyone to do anything. Is that correct or fair?
A Representative Allard, for the record. Mr. Chair, may I go ahead and answer that, please? So I think part of the issue is, and I want to make it clear for the public record, that particular petition came through, and what it did was, and I'm not sure everybody had read it, Representative Sadler, it came from one individual with one email, and then every single person supposedly supported the entire thing. I would question that document of the severity of those accusations of being forced. But I will tell you, sometimes women do want to have births at home in an environment where it's loving and caring. Not every woman wants to be surrounded by doctors and other nurses to deliver their child. I can speak on my own that for me, my daughter was transverse, my first one, and I had C-sections both times. My children both came about 6 weeks early. So for me, it was best that I was in a hospital environment. I also gave birth at a private hospital, fully covered with insurance, and I also gave birth at a military hospital. They were significantly different. When I gave birth at a private hospital covered with insurance, the care was completely different. They were loving. They were kind. They took my baby. They held her. It was almost like it was their baby, and they loved me the same way. When I gave birth in an Army facility, it was completely different. I was pretty much felt a little bit discarded. After I had her, it was via C-section, and it was within 16 months of my first baby. And it was very grueling. It was hard to recover from it. And the forcing of me to do things that I wasn't physically able to do at that point, taking a shower, they weren't taking the baby from the room. I was a little bit paranoid. I just had my first baby, and I barely had 16 months to have my second baby. There is some sort of trauma that can be with that. So when we say we might be forced to have our babies elsewhere, had I had the option to have a midwife, I would have done it. And Representative Sadler, when you understand this, because we have women who live at the end of Eagle River Road, and you and I both know that Eagle River Road and other parts of Eagle River and Chugiak and Peters Creek, you can be anywhere from an hour to an hour and a half to a facility. And that would be stressful on a mom if she was forced to have her baby in a hospital. If they don't have the insurance, in which this bill will continue to cover, that we can be able to have all the moms have the insurance used by the direct entry midwives, then they could have their babies at home instead of being out of pocket anywhere from $3,000 to $5,000. So I would just like to have this committee be able to support what's happening here and be able to give women the decision if they want to have their babies at a hospital or at home where their environment is safe and loving.
Right. Sure. And I appreciate the back and forth. And to the chair, I'll just say, I don't think anyone is debating the value or benefit of midwifery. Absolutely not. It's a question of more technical. How is it licensed? How is it administered, et cetera, et cetera. I will stipulate that midwifery is good, and those women that, and families that want to engage in the services should have a right to do so. We engage a little more on the technical legal side. So I don't know if I or anybody else need to be persuaded of the value, but it's just how we manage it. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Allard, through the chair. I appreciate that, Representative Sadler, and I kind of probably gave a little bit more information than I ever intended to. Now it's all on public record, but there you have it. So thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Representative Allard. We can move on to the rest of your invited testimony if that works for you.
Yes, we do have. Don't we have anybody else?
Mm-hmm. We have Rachel.
Yes, you should be on the phone right now, Rachel Pugh. Yes,
Rachel Pugh, if you're there, please put your name on the record and begin your testimony.
Hello. Thank you, Chair and committee members, for allowing me to your invited testimony today. My name is Rachel Pugh. I am a practicing midwife in Eagle River, Alaska, and I am also one of the CDM members on the Alaska State Board of Midwifery. I'm testifying today in support of HB 175. HB 175 is sitting in front of you today because of our 2020 legislative audit. In February 2021, I was tasked with the job of completing Recommendation 1 of our legislative audit since the other two recommendations had already been completed. Recommendation one from the audit stated, and I quote, the board should recommend statutory changes that benefit the public, end quote. It was then I contacted our national certifying organization, NARMS, North American Registry of Midwives, and asked for assistance with this project. I was given multiple different state statutes to research and look at to help update our statutes. The executive director at NARM was very helpful in reviewing the changes with suggestions until we had a final draft for the board to review. After careful consideration and review, the board voted unanimously, including the position that sat on our board at that time, to introduce it as a bill, and HB 175 was born. Very simply put, this bill completes that legislative audit and helps move Alaska midwifery into the 21st century by updating statutes to the national standards, which benefits the public. So the question I have for you is, why would you not pass this bill? I appreciate your time today and hope you agree it's time to pass HB 175. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Then next we have Ida Darrow. Darrow, please put your name on the record and begin your testimony.
That's all right. My name is Ida Darrow, and as Rachel just presented, I am the executive director of the North American Registry of Midwives. We issue the credential certified professional midwife that is being proposed as the standard for licensure. It's equivalent to, in many ways, to what is currently required. In fact, it is our exam. It is used as the state licensure exam, so that part would be the same. But it means that the eligibility requirements are standardized. They are what is nationally being used by most states, and we are an accredited credential, which means that everything about our credentialing process has been evaluated by the National Credentialing Association and approved so that we meet all the standards for creating and maintaining a credential, for developing the licensing exam, for setting the eligibility criteria, and all of that. So we meet that, and that is what most states are doing. One of the biggest advantages is that it means that that entire evaluation process is done by professionals at the North American Registry of Midwives, which means that the state, the local agency, does not have to keep an expert always on staff who can evaluate education, supervised practice, and all the details of someone demonstrating their competency that's verified by holding the national credential. It also means it's consistent with what other states do, so it ensures more of the portability of a credential because you're holding the one with the national standard. So we also have a recertification every 3 years. It requires specific continuing education and peer review processes. So that's assured when you have to relicense. You also have to demonstrate that you continue to carry the national credential, meaning, again, you have done the continuing education and the peer review that's required for that. So those are the main advantages to this update to your law, that you're meeting the national standards, which is a good move, a good way to see that you are not getting behind in the way things are done with having your midwives be licensed and regulated. Plus, I think it's a real benefit to change the term from certified direct entry midwife to licensed midwife. That's what almost all states use, is that the title is licensed midwife, and that's what's recognized by most insurance companies, is that you are a licensed midwife, not that you're a certified direct entry midwife. So it's consistent with the way reimbursement is handled by most insurance companies. So I'm happy to answer any questions about the certification process or the benefits of using this national process as your eligibility criteria for licensure.
Okay. Representative Prox.
Thank you. Through the chair, Ms. Darrow, I believe.
Was her yes. Name.
Does the registry, I guess, the certification, National Certification Registry, do they handle disciplinary measures for other states?
That can, yes. We do have an accountability process, which again is part of our accreditation, where a client can complain to NARM about care that she received, and the NARM process will evaluate that that care by reviewing the records and hearing testimony. Now, if it's about, if the complaint is more related to following state regulations, then we encourage that to go back for whatever the state's process is for dealing with it. But the client sort of has that choice of whether to take it to the state or to bring it to NARM. And if the evaluation is such that the certification is revoked, if that state requires the CPM, then NARM notifies the state of the revocation. If the state does not require the CPM, then there's really no pathway for us to notify the state. We do publish it on our website, but that would be up to someone in the state checking that regularly. So if, again, if the CPM is required for licensure, we do notify the state if a credential is revoked.
Okay, thank you. And I, sorry, I follow up. I'm sorry. I don't remember right now in the bill where I saw that, but there was skill requirements, and I'm guessing that the National Registry has included skill requirements in their certification.
Yes, we require that we require the educational component, and we require the supervised clinical period of at least 2 years. And during that supervised clinical period, the student is always under the supervision of the registered preceptor, and that preceptor verifies that they've met the demonstration of each skill. So part of our application is that the preceptor is verifying all the skills that we list. And the skills are determined by our job analysis, which is what is required for national accreditation, is that you determine essential skills by doing a job analysis survey to identify all those skills, and that is what NARM has done and continues to do so that we're updating the skills that are required on a regular basis. That content, that list of knowledge and skills, also is the test content outline. So for the written exam, they have to have studied the reference text and learned about the knowledge and the skill required to address situations that they might encounter as a midwife. And that is required that it be, again, verified during their clinical period, and also that they may be tested on that knowledge and skill as well.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay.
Sure.
Okay. Next, we have Alyssa DeCanto. Please put your name on the record and begin your testimony.
Hello. My name is Alyssa DeCanto. I am a certified nurse midwife. Thank you, everyone, for having me here to testify today. I am located in Kodiak, Alaska, where I practice out of hospital. Not only am I the only midwife on this island, I'm also the only provider that offers out of hospital services. I have been working with CPMs my entire career as a midwife and beforehand. CPMs were what inspired me to go into birth work in the first place. I trust them as providers, and I trust them as colleagues, and continue to trust and work with them as collaborators. They really are experts in normal birth, normal pregnancy, specialists in trauma-informed care, community health, just normal occurrences in the reproductive life cycle of women. This bill, HB 175, I'm testifying in support of, not only because it would bring midwives in Alaska to national standards, it also assures that their integrity remains intact, especially when insurance companies can recognize their services and reimburse for them and allows greater access to communities. Alaska deserves more access to competent care that is up to national standards with experts in that specific care. Unfortunately, in Alaska, it has become a privilege to find specialists and not a right, as though we would like it. And so whatever can not only bolster, but also assure kind of the sanctity of the integrity of midwives going forward, which HB 175 does help to do, is something that I'm in support of. Thank you. And I'm available for questions if you've got any.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Sadler.
Thank you, ma'am. I just would ask the same question I asked Ms. Yanagawa. The difference in the qualitative difference in services provided to women using a midwife's care under the current regulatory regime in Alaska, and how that would be different under certification as licensed, terminology as a certified midwife with a national credential. What's the difference in service?
Absolutely, and I think that's a great question, which I agree with Mary that the scope of practice is very similar. However, the national standards and being able to not only share with other midwives in other areas and in the legislature with other areas kind of allows midwives to be somewhat protected so that they cannot eventually fall victim to dissolution, which is just as important as broadening any sort of scope.
Through the chair, if I can follow up. I'm not sure, ma'am, what you mean by subject to disillusion, like being discouraged or being dissolved. Or I'm not quite sure. Could you expand on that, please?
Sure, of course. I do, somewhat dramatically, but also feeling accurately, being dissolved as a group. There's protection in being able to be recognized at a national standard, even though it doesn't necessarily change the day-to-day practice of what is allowable in the scope. I think midwives are vulnerable to not being allowed to practice or having very, very limited access, especially with the inability to get reimbursed by insurance.
So again, through the chair, follow up. So again, it's the scope of practice, except for the three areas, the three different kinds of services, three different kinds of deliveries that Ms. Yanagawa said. The licensure would provide some protection of the profession, I guess is what you're saying.
May I interrupt quickly, please?
Of course.
I apologize. I just want to make sure that we don't use and intertwine the languages.
Yeah.
This bill doesn't actually change the scope. It changes the responsibility. And so I just want that on the record.
Representative Dollar, thank you. Thank you. Okay. That's my questions.
Okay. All right. Seeing no other questions before the committee, we're going to set this bill aside for, I believe, Monday, where we'll take public testimony. I will notice an amendment deadline for noon on Monday. We'll take a brief at ease, then move on to SSCR4 to disapprove EO 127. At ease. On the record, moving on to SSCR4. To disapprove EO 127, Board of Massage Therapists. Public testimony is now open on SSCR4. Is there anyone in the room wishing to testify on SSCR4? No? Okay, we will go online. I see Annetta Atwell. If you'd like to put your name on the record and begin your testimony.
Honorable Representative Sumner and committee members, through the chair, thank you for the opportunity to testify on behalf of the Board of Massage Therapists. My name is Annetta Atwell, and I'm currently the chair of the Massage Board, and I am in Fairbanks. Mm-hmm. All right. I'm honored to represent the board during this hearing to urgently request your veto on Executive Order 127. Executive Order 127 should be vetoed by the legislation for several reasons. And the elimination of the Board of Massage Therapists for the reason of massage board's efficiency has already been debunked by the Sunset Audit evaluation. The auditor, Chris Curtis, evaluated our board's performance in several areas. The single area that was cited as being a concern for the board is a need for licensing fee increase. This must be done with the DCCED. The three other recommendations made by Ms. Curtis was directly focused on the DCCED. This board has done a lot of work through the 9 years of existence to improve the status of massage therapists in Alaska. From the onset of the establishment of professional licensing, revisions of regulations, professional input on investigations that concern scope of practice, development of disciplinary matrices for a diverse range of definable negligence or illegal activities, this board has consistently focused efforts to keep safety, professionalism, and the best interest of the massage therapist and the public at the forefront. We continue to pursue maintaining a connection with national organizations in the profession of massage therapy, from suggested minimum education hours, allowable CE topics and providers, and testing requirements, to engaging with other state boards to learn how they manage difficult issues that arise, whether in disciplinary action, regulation wording to close loopholes, or efficiency topics. Our goal is to continue the training of our board members for safety protocols concerning human trafficking and prostitution rings. This includes being aware of the existence of numerous diploma mills and scams where perpetrators are impersonating massage students to take national exams. We desire to keep abreast of current information from these organizations when looking at license applications from unknown schools. A few of the task forces in the contiguous United States have given massage boards information and insights that can help us as we critique applications for new licensees. There are known addresses that are associated with human trafficking rings, of which we have been made aware through these agencies. That should automatically indicate a no response to an application. We volunteer because we care. We are vetted through the state with background checks and strategic questions about being able to be unbiased or honest with ourselves to know when we should recuse ourselves. The fact that we have four other board members that can walk through an investigation and make good judgment why there isn't just one person sought for their opinion. If this process, yes, sir?
Nobody said anything, Mrs. Atwell. Please continue.
Can you still hear me?
We could hear you.
Okay, thank you. Sorry about that. The fact that we have four other board members that can walk through an investigation and make good judgment is why there isn't one person sought for their opinion. If this process is left to the good people at the state, they will have to procure a vetted licensed massage therapist whose opinion isn't compromised for any reason and pay them. But is one voice enough to rightly judge? With a board, it's not a question. In addition, this board has made a priority through the years to host our colleagues in a town hall meeting each year so their voice can be heard. We can learn a lot from our colleagues in a town hall meeting. These licensees have a lot to offer to help us understand the needs that arise while practicing. We want to hear their voice. We want to continue keeping the community safe from unlicensed practices and indicators of businesses that may fall under massage therapy umbrella but do not obtain licenses or establishment licenses. Our desire is always safety of the therapist, the consumer, and the public. Finally, our licensees can bill insurance companies if they have gone through a vetting process becoming credentialed with each individual insurance company. The Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development issued a letter stating that the elimination of our board should not affect these constituents. However, reading the letter further, they recognize that each insurance company makes their own rules, that it is actually the onus of the licensee to verify that they will still be covered. We want to keep that extra layer of professionalism available for those billing insurance companies not to fall prey to a withdrawal of coverage due to the removal of our board. Thank you for your time. I am available to answer any questions.
Okay, Representative Prox.
Yes, thank you. And I'm sorry, I didn't write your name down, but ma'am, Do the... go ahead.
Through the chair, it's Annetta Atwell.
Atwell. Thank you. Do you know whether the insurance companies base their underwriting criteria on the national standard or your national license?
I do not know exactly what they base it on. I do know that we have to procure a national provider number, and that's how we are able to bill insurance. So it has to go through a national business.
Mm-hmm. And follow up. And does the National Certification Board, do they engage in disciplinary actions in any states?
Would you please repeat that question for me?
Would the National Certification Board accept complaints and engage in disciplinary actions in other states?
That question, if it's okay, I would like to defer to our immediate previous chair, Jill Motz, okay, who is also waiting online to answer any other questions. But I will answer what I can. This one is not one that I know the answer to.
Sure. Okay. Thank you.
This is Jill Motz. I am in Palmer, Alaska. As Annetta mentioned, I'm the immediate past chair for the State Board of Massage Therapists. The answer to that question is no. There aren't any national organizations that participate in any sort of punishment or oversight for massage therapists. Our program does report to them if there is a license action taken, but it is not, there isn't anyone else with authority over massage therapists.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Seeing no other testimony, we will close public testimony on SSCR 4. We're going to set this aside for future date, I think actually Monday. And then we're going to move on to SSCR 6 to disapprove EO 129, Board of Barbers and Hairdressers. Public testimony is now open on SSCR 6. Is there anybody in the room wanting to testify? Okay. I see no one online, so we will close public testimony on SSCR 6. And we will also set this bill aside. And last on the agenda is SSCR 7. To disapprove EO 130 for midwives. Public testimony is now open on SSCR 7. Is there anybody in the room wanting to testify on SSCR 7? No? And I see no one online, so we will close public testimony and also set this aside. That concludes our business today. Seeing no other business before the committee, we will adjourn. Let the record reflect the time is 4:18 p.m.